What is the current federal policy around stem cell research?
The current federal policy around stem cell research is that President Bush has ordered that the only stem cell lines derived from human embryos that can be involved in federally funded research are those that have been created before August 9th, 2001. So that means that there are 21 lines available for that funding. Those lines have been around for a while, obviously. They're still useful for some basic research, but there are some problems with those lines, some technical problems, and all stem cell biologists who are in this area agree that some other lines that have been derived since then really need to be used in federally funded research, and they are in fact being used in non-federally funded research around the world as we speak.
What, with the new Congress, do you think there's going to be any change in the status of the federal legislation?
Well, we have high hopes that if the president does veto the legislation that's been passed by the House, and another version of which is being developed by the Senate, that that there will be a veto-proof majority in both houses when that legislation comes back to them. But it may be that the administration will succeed, at least in the House, if not the Senate, in holding its veto, in which case we'll have to keep working on this issue at the state level while also continuing to talk to friends and supporters at the federal level.
If the president does, get his way and the administration continues with the current federal policy, then what options do states have?
Well, under the law, it is legal to do embryonic stem cell research. So the options for the state, I think each state needs to think about what its goals are with respect to supporting biotechnology and medical research in the near and foreseeable future, how that those policies can benefit the state as it moves forward to think about the prosperity of its people and the health of its people. So the states really have a wide open opportunities. We have learned things, I think, from the California experience, for example, from Massachusetts and Maryland, and other states. So we're really in a much better position now to see the states move forward efficiently than we were a few years ago before the California experience really started.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to get into a little bit more specifics on what states can do. I mean, I think the first question always is, where do they find the resources and the money? I mean, is it very, does it cost a lot? Is it a heavy burden on resources for a state to be able to actually pursue this type of legislation and science?
I think that the critical issue here is not the dollars. It's the message that a state needs to send to in people who are interested in investing in this research and to scientists both inside the state and elsewhere who may be interested in participating in this research, which is clearly the future of medicine in that state. So I don't think, I think that one needs to send a signal that one state is friendly, that the state sees an obligation to worry about diseases that we don't have adequate treatment for now. And embryonic stem cell research is only part of a bigger area that people are now starting to call regenerative medicine, and the idea there is to use our own cells to treat ourselves. So in a certain sense, the embryonic stem cell debate has unfortunately become so politicized that it's eclipsed the bigger picture. The bigger picture is, are the states and their research institutions prepared to be friendly hosts for the future of medical research? And it's not so much a matter of dollars, it's a matter of presentation and attitude.
That's really interesting, because I think a lot of times, state legislators and others think that, it seems like it's a really expensive proposition and where you find the money, but, from what you're saying, it sounds like it's more about the message that they're sending versus the dollars that it might take.
Right, and there may be states who feel, well, we like this, but we have some other projects, there are some other mm-hmm. things we're interested in, and we just can't do this right now, and that of course, that's fine. I mean, different states have different infrastructures, and there are only a few top scientists in most states, and they may be working in areas that are not immediately oriented toward stem cell biology or toward embryonic stem cell biology, and obviously supporters, we understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they can send a signal to new scientists that they recruit at their universities, to graduate students, to postdoctoral fellows, that we're not closing the door. And we really want you to come and be part of a new economy and a new framework for doing medical research that other states and other countries are pursuing.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, right after dollars, then I think what this particular issue is, or I think it may even trump the dollar issue, is what are the ethical and moral implications of this? I think that is where a lot of people just have paused to try and, you know, figure out whether it's something that they want to pursue legislatively, and there's, you know, concerns, and I think legitimate concerns from people of faith and in faith communities about some of the ethical and moral implications. Do you have a way to maybe address that particular concern, or
Well, absolutely. That's part of a much larger conversation. I think the first thing we have to say is that our goal is not to undermine anybody's religious principles. The second thing we can say is that there is tremendous diversity philosophically among the great monotheistic religions on this kind of question. There are some groups who believe that the conceptus, the embryo at the moment of conception, has all the rights of a born human being. But in fact, the vast bulk of believers in monotheism and some version of monotheism around the world do not have that view. And in fact, the great Catholic theologians, for example, St. Thomas, St. Augustine, did not have that view. It's a relatively recent view, even in the Catholic Church. So, and I think we see this reflected also in surveys of people of faith. The majority of people who identify with the faith tradition actually support this research, and even evangelical Christians seem to divide pretty much 50-50 so far on this. So, religious faith does not exclude a sense that this is an area that is so important for human suffering that we need to move forward. And of course, all the great faiths also have another value, which is that part of our obligation, and they express it in different ways, but part of our duty on earth is to help people who are in need. And I think that to a great extent, this competing value, which again is also a basic part, in fact one could argue a more basic part of religious faith, Judeo-Christian and Islamic traditions, than even the idea of when the embryo is a person, that principle, that value has really gotten lost in this in the last few years, and my hope is that progressives can, with people in faith traditions, begin to bring that value back into the center of conversation.
Can you talk some specifically about, there's been several states that have done, as you mentioned, California, Wisconsin, and a few others. Can you talk a little bit about, more specifically about what like a state like Wisconsin has done to be able to you know, recruit this type of, or get this type of, or expand this type of science and legislation?
Well, Wisconsin's almost the joker in the deck because it's such a unique situation. Of course, it was Jamie Thompson at the University of Wisconsin-Madison who first isolated human embryonic stem cells in 1998. And to their credit, the university and elected officials and policymakers in the state really saw that the tremendous opportunities for Wisconsin. I think if this had happened in other states, hopefully people there would have realized it too, but you have to give Wisconsin a lot of credit. They understood the implications. Of course, what Wisconsin has done is made a public investment that is not as great as California, but in the $100 million in that range. But nonetheless, along with the scientific expertise that they have locally. That's a pretty powerful combination.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, in that sense, they're the envy of the other 6, 8, 10 states that are looking at this right now. So they have really set a standard. I think it's especially important that they're in America's heartland. If this had happened in a northeastern state, perhaps it wouldn't have the big social implications that it has for this to happen in the middle of the country. I think that was a really good thing.
Can you also speak to, you know, recently, you know, Missouri, through a ballot initiative, passed legislation there, and that state is particularly conservative, considering that the abortion lobby is, you know, the largest in that state. And there was some talk about the faith community now organizing against the passage of it. Can you talk a little bit about that example and, you know, how were there any pitfalls to what was done there? Do you think that a ballot initiative is a way to go, or through the legislation, maybe a little, through the legislature, maybe a little bit of a better option? Or,
well, I went to graduate school in St. Louis, so I know something about Missouri politics and the political culture in Missouri. And, of course, the initiative that you're talking about had a very modest goal, which was just to make the statement that it is not illegal to do this research in Missouri. It didn't commit any public funds. You know, I'm very glad it passed. It was a product of an alliance of the scientific community and the universities and research centers, but also progressive faith groups who are very deeply involved in making the point that there's not one voice of the faith community, that it's quite diverse. And I think that was very positive. I will say that I wish that it could have been done perhaps with a little more balance in terms of the amount of money that was spent on one side or the other. But, you know, nonetheless, the fact is that the opponents have been much better organized nationally and have really had a lot more resources to throw at this issue.
Mm-hmm.
So while it's true that there was an imbalance in terms of the amount of money that was spent in Missouri on one side or the other, nonetheless, nationally it has not been the case that progressives have been as well organized as they were in Missouri.
When, let me go, what particular benefits does this type of legislation have in a state?
I think the primary benefit in the case of a state like Missouri is that it kept the important research centers in the state, and it kept opportunities to attract both future public and private investment in the state. So, as you know, institutions were worried, and I think talking openly about actually opening headquarters in other states that were more friendly to this work. And that would have been very bad at all levels. I mean, it would have been bad for the economy. It would have been bad for the morale of the state. Perhaps not in the short run, but certainly in the long run. You have those, you know, major research universities and centers in Missouri that would have been hurt indefinitely,
mm-hmm.
and perhaps irretrievably by losing on this question. And it's not over yet. I mean, I mm-hmm. as you well know, the opponents are coming back and trying to gut the results of the initiative. But I believe in the long run they will fail, because in the long run, again, this is the future of medicine.
You know, you mentioned universities. Are they a particular natural ally, and are there other natural allies that a politician or, you know, a political figure in a state could look towards to help them, you know, build up support in the state for legislation that they may be considering?
Absolutely. I am not a scientist by training, but I spend a lot of time with scientists, and particularly in the life sciences and biology, people are very unhappy right now about the difficulty that they're having to get a voice that will be influential in these debates, and feel that they have a lot to offer, and they do, of course. And I find that even opponents, although they may have their own deep views that would not be changed by hearing what a scientist has to say, they respect what they have to say.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting to me that the ideological opposition goes out of its way to try to find somebody with a PhD in science to to speak in opposition, even though the people that they get, and I'm thinking of a couple of people in particular, don't actually do science, and have not for years, and don't do stem cell biology. So it's very, I think, revelatory that people do want to hear from scientists. They respect the scientific voice. So I think it would be very important for activists, elected officials, advocates to identify those scientists in the universities and research centers in their states who will appear with them and will explain, have also good teachers, there are a lot of them, good teachers who can explain in ways that everyone can understand why this is important and what where the science is going.
As a legislator considers specific legislation or drafting legislation, is there any language or language not to use in when drafting legislation?
Well, prohibitions against techniques, I think, are to be avoided. For example, prohibitions against what's often called somatic cell nuclear transfer or cloning are to be avoided because we just don't know how important they might be in the future or as a laboratory technique that could help us to understand certain diseases that people have in their genes or language that prohibits the making of certain laboratory animals with human cells in them, also for the study of disease that you couldn't study in human beings ethically. Also, I think we have to be very careful about that. I also think that this legislation needs to learn from the California experience to be very sensitive to transparency. If I think most states have open meetings laws, for example, those need to be taken into account. I think all this legislation needs to be aware of conflict of interest problems. It's critical that there be disinterested people who are watchdogging how the money is spent. So I think this kind of language and certain kinds of public sensitivities need to be recognized immediately when states are planning for these efforts.
So, and my last question, and this just recently was in the news, the issue of amniotic fluid as a potential a source for this type of research. And, you know, some of the message that was out there was that this may potentially even replace embryonic stem cell research. It's something that's less controversial ethically, as we discussed earlier. Can you respond to some of those things? And is it really a substitute, or how do you view that particular science?
Well, one thing this shows is that the scientific process doesn't pay attention to the political process at all, because if you want to think in terms of the politics, this is the worst possible timing, coming just right around the time of the House vote. But science moves at its own pace, and it should, and it shouldn't be hemmed in by politics, which is the whole point of our conversation. The important takeaway lesson here is that while the opponents have jumped on this publication, even the scientist who led the work at Wake Forest University says that amniotic stem cells will not be a substitute for embryonic stem cells. And in fact, people who are competent to read these papers have said that it's not at all clear that the cells that he's getting are even as potent, could possibly be as potent, and have the range that he is hoping that they will have. So the reality is that, again, all of this needs to be seen from a scientific standpoint, not just a political standpoint. The different ways of getting these cells, amniotic fluid, umbilical cord blood, circulating cells in adults, embryos, placental tissues. The question for the biologist is not which sources are politically acceptable. The question for the scientist is, which kinds of cells do we need to do what kind of work? Which cells do we need to learn about the human condition? That's the way that the scientists approach this question. It's not in terms of the way that political activists approach the question. And I think we need to get that message across. And again, no one who actually works on stem cells from any source at any stage of human development believes that they will replace embryonic stem cells.
Thank you, Jonathan, for your time, and I think this was very helpful.
Thank you.